What's going on, beautiful people? This is Mr. No Excuses and my man Jay.
What's going on? What's going on?
With another episode of the Hidden Truths Podcast, where we provide therapy through conversation, restoring trust and community advocacy, one conversation at a time. What are those skeletons you've been hiding in your closet? What are those uncomfortable conversations that you need to have that may be holding you back from your progress? The more we talk about it, the more we communicate openly and honestly about it, the more we can start trusting each other. The more we start trusting each other, the more we can start building and growing with each other. So that's what we're here to talk about with the Hidden Truths Podcast. Be sure to check us out and subscribe. We're available on all social media platforms and all listening platforms. Hidden Truths Podcast. And for this week's community spotlight, actually in here with us in the podcast studio, we have the lovely Miss Kalia of Disrupt Transform. So Miss Kalia, I want to let you go ahead and give us a high level overview of what Disrupt Transform is and kind of how you got started with it.
Okay, so I'm going to try and keep this brief. I've been working on my elevator pitch for this. It's still a work in progress, but Disrupt Transform is a company I founded to, one, merge who I am as a person. So I have a background in social work, but I'm very much an activist and a community advocate. So the disrupt comes from the part of me that knows that there are certain things going on with us individually and at a system level that we have to stop doing, aka disrupt. And then as a social worker, looking at it from the standpoint of, once you stop something, you have to replace it with something, and that something should be better. So Disrupt Transform is about informed empowerment and combining the fact that in order to really empower someone, they need to understand the root cause of how they got into that situation in the first place. So I work with individuals, communities, organizations, other businesses from a racial equity lens in helping people understand the different historical and current day policies and structures that have created some of the negative outcomes we're seeing in today's society, and then taking that knowledge and applying that social work background around empowerment to help people overcome those circumstances. But I believe in order to overcome, you have to have all of the facts, as brutal as they may be.
Absolutely, absolutely, because the application of knowledge is power. And if you don't have the full story, your solutions might not work.
Exactly.
You may be fixing an issue that isn't the actual issue that you need to be resolving.
Right.
So how can we find you or Disrupt Transform? What's the way we can get in contact with you?
So right now, you can email me, Kalia, K-A-L-E-I-A, at DisruptTransform.com. My social media is under construction. I'm not planning to start a website. I'm letting this process be extremely organic, but really reaching out to me via email or my personal social media platform at 1LWONL Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E. Get it? Like 1L Michelle.
Gotcha.
You know. but just reaching out to me personally, I do facilitation. If you're at a company where you can clearly see they need some conversation around what racism really is and how it's impacting the office environment, that's what I'm here to do. And I've also created a game that's really like a primer, and it teaches people the three different types of racism. So it's very interactive, and it teaches people the difference between personal, cultural, and institutional racism. And so that's like the thing that people have really been reaching out to me for. It's a good conversation starter, and it gets people to the point where we can have some honest conversations around what's going on and how it's affecting all of us.
So how can we get the game?
You get the game
By contacting you.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
So it's not for sale. It's all something that's done in person, and it's something that's done with a group of people. So it's really, it's very intimate, but it's also very fun. And that's designed on purpose, because I realized that when you make something competitive, especially in a racially mixed group, adding competition and a winner and loser, it disarms people. So people are more willing to have these difficult, nuanced conversations around racism, because they just want to win a game, even though my goal is to get you to really talk and be honest.
Nice. I like it. So you kind of subconsciously introduce a competitive element, but at the same time getting people to actually open up about these topics that we tend not to talk about so much.
Exactly.
Okay, absolutely, absolutely. Well, everybody, this is our guest for today, Miss Kalia. So we brought her on for a specific reason. We got a very intricate topic lined up for us today. So my man Jay, let's give us the good word for today, my brother.
So today we're going to have a very interesting topic. The topic is called Fear Factor, not the TV show, but Fear Factor. So we're talking about those fears, those hidden things that you're afraid of or that bothers you, you know, things that you don't want to go towards because maybe you don't know the outcome, or maybe you just feel like it's something you can't do, or, you know, those particular type of things. So we're going to start off with a couple questions. Let's start off with our guest today. I usually start off with E because he usually has some good feedback. But today I want to start off with our guest. And I'm curious, what is something that you're afraid of?
So this question actually led me to doing a whole lot of research. So if you don't mind, I want to give you the definition of fear that I'm going to be coming from.
Okay.
Is that all right?
No problem.
Absolutely.
Okay. So also, I realized that in doing this, I need to give a disclaimer. So I just want to say for anybody listening that I'm not a psychologist. And though I have my Master of Social Work degree, I'm not clinically licensed. So I'm not an expert on this subject.
Public service announcement.
Yeah, she's basically saying you cannot blame her for anything you take from her.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
This is my understanding through my personal research via some legal websites, like psychological websites, and of course YouTube.
Of course.
But this is what I'm working from, and it works for me. So if it works for you, great. If not, you know, do your own research.
Absolutely.
So when I looked up fear, I found that it was defined as an unpleasant emotion caused by the feeling that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain, or a threat, right? And so I thought that was very interesting. And so then I looked up the definition for anxiety, and I found anxiety as being defined as a feeling of unease or nervousness, typically about an event or something with an uncertain outcome. So I guess when you asked me, what are you afraid of, I was starting to think more about the difference between fear and anxiety. And what I've learned with my research is that fear and anxiety are very similar, but they're also very different. So the research that I found says that fear is in response to imminent danger, right? And I think, you know, as Black people, we've heard that term before. Mm-hmm. When you think about police brutality, imminent danger. So I looked up what North Carolina law enforcement says is imminent danger. And so the North Carolina Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act defines imminent danger as the belief that deadly force is necessary to prevent an imminent threat of death, great bodily harm, or sexual assault, and that the facts and circumstances prompting that belief would cause a person of ordinary firmness to agree. So they define danger as a physical threat to your life. And when I was looking at the psychological definitions, they were also describing fear as something that's about a physical threat to your life. And so fear, my understanding now is that fear is related to things that can harm you physically. It's our evolutionary response to different stimuli like fire. We know that that burns, so we don't touch it. Or we know that a bear can kill us, that's why we're afraid of bears. But anxiety is rooted in thought.
Emotions.
And emotions.
Okay.
And so we experience the same biochemical reactions when we feel fear and anxiety. So that to me shows that it's about, the only difference is our brain thought.
Whether it's physical or emotional.
Exactly. That's the only difference. And so I just found that really interesting. So we can feel the same biochemical things like increased heart rate or sweating or dilated pupils from just believing that something might happen as something that's literally right in your face. And I think that was very important for me to understand that it's about our way of thinking. So what am I afraid of? To just be honest, I'm not afraid of many things, but I had to realize when I thought about it in terms of anxiety, there are things that show up. And I think the biggest thing was like this feeling of not being good enough.
That's interesting because a lot of Black people have that fear of inadequacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a historical context with that too, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think that's absolutely correct. Like there is some historical, like generational things that are passed down that makes a lot of Black people experience that. And then your personal experiences shape that as well. So just like being influenced by a society that has different mandates about what it means to be a woman or what it means to be an activist or a good employee. Like, we're getting messages constantly about what is seen as perfection or good. And you can look at yourself and say, well, I don't check all of those boxes, so I must not be good enough. Even though we know that's not the case, but that thought pattern, that anxiety, those societal norms create those same feelings of inadequacy as if like we're about to be attacked by a bear. Like, I've experienced like feeling so down or feeling so unworthy that I'm having an anxiety attack. Like, my heart is racing, like I'm sweating, like I'm stressed out, right?
I think for a lot of people, especially us in the Black community, there's this fear of being different, of standing out, of being an individual, because society will tell you, especially, and I'll give an example, especially as a Black woman, you're supposed to be married by this age. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to have a house by this age. You're supposed to have a child by this age. You know, you're supposed to have all these societal stigmas and standards that have been predefined as what it means to be a successful woman. If you don't meet those societal standards, by the time that society says you're supposed to have those things, mm-hmm. it creates a lot of fear and anxiety with a lot of Black women. I feel inadequate because I don't have a husband or because I can't find a mate. I feel inadequate because I don't have kids. And it starts to create this fear of, well, what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Do you ever, so with you being a young Black woman in this today's society, do you ever run across things like that or ever have those type of thoughts?
Every day.
Wow. What's up? Okay.
Every day, I think it's one of my forms of protest or like disruption is allowing myself to reject those societal norms that are telling me, oh, you're not married. Oh, you're not good enough. Mm. Oh, you don't make a certain amount of money. You're not trying hard enough. Because every day I'm working to improve myself. And I know that it's a process. It's a journey. But not allowing what other people have prescribed or really projected onto me about where my life should be, I've decided to intentionally disrupt those narratives and create my own. But something you said earlier, just, you know, talking about how society tells you these things and then we start to believe them. I found myself also doing some research because I used to study psychology before I got bored and switched to social work. but when I remember, like, social psychology was so interesting to me, and it made me think about the self-fulfilling prophecy and that concept. And so I wanted to make sure I came correct. So I'm gonna read the definition that I found.
All right.
And it says,
and this is the definition of self-fulfilling prophecy.
All
right.
And it's defined as a prediction that causes a new behavior, which makes the original prediction come true. So there is basically saying that there's a link between what you believe and how you act. And your belief informs your behavior. And since your belief informs your behavior, it's going to inform the outcome. So basically, like, what you believe you will manifest. And so I thought about an example. And, you know, we're talking about Black women and this concept around, like, dating and what it means if you're not married. And I thought about this because it kind of relates, you know, it hits home. And so here's the example. Say you're a woman who's had her heart broken in the past, and now you've decided that because of these negative experiences, all men are trash, right?
I hear that so much.
Right, we hear it, right? It's very common to say, even though, let's be honest, women say that and still be ready to find a man. Like, we just do that.
Right.
It's us trying to protect ourselves. Right. But, you know, that's the thought that you've decided that you're going to have. And so now you're going to go on a date, right? But because you have this belief that all men are trash, on that date, you're more likely going to be more rigid. You're going to be dry. You're going to be kind of standoffish. And you're definitely going to be looking for something to be wrong with this guy. You might be genuinely interested in him, but because you've already decided that all men are trash, they're all going to let you down, they all just want to, like, use you and leave, those beliefs are going to inform your actions. And it's probably subconscious. Like, you probably don't even realize you're doing it. But now you're on this date and you're acting standoffish. And even though this guy might genuinely be into you, because of the way you're acting, he's getting the signal that, okay, this isn't going to work. It must be something about me that she doesn't like. So let me go take this energy elsewhere. So after the date, he might not text you as much. He probably stops calling. And when he does talk to you, you can see the difference in his communication because now he's decided to pull back to protect his energy. And let's be honest, like men struggle with insecurities around being desired as well. So he's protecting himself. But now the girl, because she probably hasn't realized what she was doing during that date, is saying to herself, see, I knew he wasn't serious. I knew he didn't care. I knew all men were trash.
That math don't add up to me. So a woman's trying to add something to her life, but her action is subtracted from it.
Because she
still at zero.
Because she hasn't figured out that the problem isn't with the men that she's selecting. It's this behavior that she's portraying. She hasn't realized that that is the root cause.
How often do you think that happens?
I think it happens a lot. And I think it happens on both sides.
Absolutely.
So it's not just women who are doing this. It's also men saying, oh, she just wants me because she think I got money. She just wants me for what I have. I'm going to treat her like this.
Right. Because a lot of men, that's what they portray when they're seeking women.
Exactly.
They want to go out and get, you know, the fanciest car, wear the newest suit, you know, talk about how much money they make, what job they have, or whatever the case may be. And so you start to attract the women that are looking for that and repel the women that don't care about those frivolous things that you're bringing to the table.
Exactly.
And so when you get what you're putting out there, even though that's not the type of mate that you want, your energy is attracting what you don't want.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, men aren't that far off from, like you said, from how women are. So, like, for instance, if you have a man that's interested in a female and he wants to go out with her, so sometimes not about money, it's about how we think a woman is, her lifestyle. So we're automatically thinking that I'm one of many that you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us to protect ourselves, we're kind of acting hard like, well, I ain't going to really get into it because she got three other dudes she, you know, entertaining.
Right. And that is something I realize. We don't call that fear when men have that thought, or we don't call that anxiety. We call that life. The reality is that thought that, oh, she's entertaining other guys, I'm not the only one, so I'm not going to put too much into this, that is rooted in a fear that you are not good enough. That's rooted in a fear that she's out here because I'm not alone worthy. Damn, right?
I guess I ain't worried. I think that about all these females. I'd be like, man.
And so it's
no, you're talking to five of them.
So it's really a projection. You're projecting onto her what you feel about yourself. And as men, when that's happening, we blame women, because if you're coming into a situation not confident about what you bring to the table, that's going to show. And we can sense that, even though you might not ever say that's what you're thinking. So when you come into it and you're thinking she's talking to XYZ, so I'm not going to put too much into it, all she's seeing is that you're not putting too much into it. So then she's saying, see, he's just out here playing. I don't have time for that. Let me go entertain someone else. So because you did not put in what you wanted to out of fear, now she's going to go entertain someone else. So that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You manifested that because of your original belief that that's what was going on, with no proof of that.
Okay, so you say it's no proof. So in this is a big circle then. So you have a female that says, guys ain't shit.
Mm-hmm.
So she's acting a certain way. And then more than likely, females are talking to multiple people because they don't want to give all their stuff to one person. So it's like, well, I'm going to protect myself. So if this guy is not right, I still got these others. So then me as a guy, I might go into a situation. I'm like, well, I know how this girl did. I'm going to do her. I'm going to do the next girl the same way and think that she's... It's like a round robin. This is a continuing circle amongst all of us.
Yeah, it's a feedback loop.
Yeah, it's going through a revolving door.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, regardless of how many options that someone may have, you know, if I'm a guy and, well, I'm a guy and...
Thank you. Yeah. I've known you for a while.
Ain't nothing changed. So I'm a guy, I meet a female. Psychologically, I already know I'm probably not the only guy she's talking to, and I don't see anything wrong with that. But I don't let that stop me from being who I am, because It's like a job interview in a sense. If I'm the best candidate, you're going to select me.
Exactly.
But some people don't like competition, though, either. You're the type of person you are where you're like, hey, I take competition. I take it on here.
Well, not even just that, because I don't look at it as competition. My only competition is myself.
Exactly.
So if you choose me, cool. If not, cool.
But that's your thought process. But it's a lot of men that's like, yo, I want to talk to somebody that's not talking to nobody. Because it's almost like they want to make it easier. Be like, hey, I want to easy transition instead of me having to fight through all this other stuff. I'm just saying that's how some men think.
And what is that rooted in is the question.
Ego.
Is it ego?
It is ego. And why does that exist? Like, why are men scared of competition? Because what you're describing is a fear of competing. Like,
right.
You want it to be easy. So that is rooted in this anxiety or this inherent feeling that I alone am not good enough.
What about the black man, though? The black man goes through a lot. So maybe we just tired of all the competition in the world we go through anyway.
Okay, but what about the black woman? Y'all are not the only ones struggling. You know, we're all dealing with trauma. And, you know, that brings up the conversation of intersectionality, meaning like your different identities impact the way you experience life. So when we say, like, what about the black man and all he goes through, let's look at police brutality, right? We know that black men are killed by police, but we also know that black women are killed by police. The only difference is because we live in a patriarchal, aka an institutionalized sexist society, we only hear about what's happening to men. For instance, did you know that the second most common complaint among law enforcement after police killing black people is sexual assault?
I didn't know that for a fact, but I'm not surprised by that, unfortunately.
Right.
Because
so,
black women have been going through sexual assault for generations.
Exactly.
Since we've been in America.
Since we've been here. Like, I heard someone saying it was so, it really touched me. She said black women were the first credit cards. And when you think about slavery, the black woman was so valued because of her ability to produce offspring.
Absolutely.
So black women cost more because a slave owner knew that when he bought a black woman, he was also buying reproductive rights. So he could multiply that investment
tenfold.
Yeah,
it's an investment.
It's a huge investment. And so if we don't see what black women are going through, and this is me speaking as a black woman, as an activist, as black men in particular, and black women, because a lot of us don't really know the extent to what we've been through. If we don't know our history, if we can't get to the root of these things, we're going to just assume that it's only black men that are struggling. Like, we're going to assume that mass incarceration only impacts black men when black women are being incarcerated at the fastest rate in this country. Like, but no one's talking about that. And why is that? Like, we just asked the question of why. How did we get here? What's happening and who's doing it?
Why is that, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I think it's happening because mass incarceration has become a common conversation, but it's been mainly focused on what's happening to black men. And as Malcolm X said, like, the most disrespected, mistreated person on the planet is the black woman. Nobody's checking for her. So we're not looking, while we're looking at black men, if we're not intersectional and broad in our thinking, we can just see mass incarceration as a black male issue. And we're not looking at all of the women who are being penalized at far harsher rates than their white female counterparts and going into these institutions at even higher rates than black men right now anyway. But let's look at, you know, suspension rates. Did you all know that black girls are 7 times more likely to be suspended than their white female counterparts?
Now you're talking about suspension from school?
Suspension from school.
Oh, yeah, I definitely believe it.
But we don't talk about that. When we look at education and we talk about the achievement gap, we look at programs for black males, and those are important programs, right? I'm not saying that let's not focus on black men. I'm saying let's focus on both. Like, it's a both and. Just like black men are really struggling in the school system, black women are struggling too. And the other part of that is this exceptional Negro event that happens on social media and in the news where we highlight the people who are doing well and lift them up as the example, and it suggests that if they can do it, you can do it too, without acknowledging all of the institutional things that they had to overcome and the fact that they're the anomaly, like they're the exception to the rule. And we have to understand that and how that plays out in our society and in the dynamic between black men and black women.
So how do you overcome fear? What are some of your ways that you say to overcome fear?
To overcome fear, I definitely think it is a process. It's not a quick fix. The things that I found that helped me overcome fear and anxiety are being honest with myself around what I'm feeling. So like acknowledging I'm experiencing fear or anxiety because, for instance, I've never been on a podcast, right? So I had to first acknowledge like, whoa, I'm kind of shook right now. Like, I'm about to be on this podcast.
You are not the only one. Trust
everybody
me.
Says.
Everybody
it.
Says.
Right. So it's just about, number one, being honest about how I feel. And two, being willing to be vulnerable. So like to say, okay, I'm nervous, but this is something I want to do. And I might not even be great at it, but I'm going to do it anyway. So like being vulnerable and being brave, like having that courage so that in spite of your fear or your anxiety, you do it anyway. I think that is very important. And I think that applies to more than just fear, like the willingness to believe that no matter what you do, nothing's going to change, and do something to counteract that anyway. So like when we think about our ancestors, some of them were born into slavery and died as slaves, right? But we know that slaves had so many different forms of protest, which means that even though they thought nothing would change for their circumstance, they did things anyway because they knew that maybe one day someone would benefit from what I've done today. And I think we have to give ourselves that same, that grace and that hope to say, even though I'm not feeling so confident about how I look today, or, you know, how I'm performing or showing up in the world today, I'm still going to take these steps to show who I am to the world, to provide my assets to society. And one day they will manifest in a positive way. You just have to give yourself that hope. Even if you don't feel it, you do it anyway.
But I think that goes to another fear as well. And I absolutely agree. We all should plant those seeds of change because mm-hmm. it takes generations for certain trees to grow. But if no one would have ever planted that seed, we wouldn't have some of the forest and some of the shade and some of the fresh air that we have.
Exactly.
So we have to be selfless in a sense and not just think about what I'm doing for me, but what I'm doing today that can positively impact future generations. Mm-hmm. But I think it goes back to, you know, a lot of people being afraid to speak out or go against the grain or truly be themselves because nobody wants to be that black sheep. Mm-hmm. There is a fear of being different. And I always remember, if y'all remember the movie Coach Carter, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and when the guy said our deepest fear is being inadequate.
Right.
And when you are seen as different than the rest, you start to feel inadequate. Mm-hmm. And so we have to figure out how to address these fears of inadequacy. And one of the things that I always say we can best do to overcome that is by knowing self, mm-hmm. by self-checking. Who am I? Most people are very afraid to answer that question. People, if you ask the average person, who are you? They'll tell you what they do mm-hmm. for a career. They'll tell you about their family. They'll tell you where they live. But that doesn't describe who you are.
It could because they really don't know.
Exactly.
Exactly.
People do not know who they are. Why is that? I think it's because we spend so much time external mm-hmm. with, I got to do this. I got to go to work. I got to take care of the family. I got to go on this vacation. You know, we deal with everything that's external and we spend very little time with the internal. And because it's a lot of us are scared of what's inside of us. We know some of the shit that we had to overcome. Those hidden truths that we don't want to portray, that we don't want anybody to broadcast. So we wear these masks. So it becomes a fear of really opening up and going back to what you said, Kalia, about being vulnerable. That's what I think keeps people from truly knowing themselves.
So one of the things that I think is interesting, I want to change gears just a little bit. We're still going to talk about fear, but what about a different type of fear, what we fear that we make it lose? One of the things I'm afraid of is failure, and especially with me having an entrepreneurial type attitude. And I hear a lot of people that I know that want to do like business stuff, but they're afraid to. Mm-hmm. And so, if y'all don't mind, I want to change gears to why we seem to be so afraid to step out. And it's probably going to lead right back to a lot of stuff we just talked about.
Probably. Mm-hmm. I want to hear your perspective, Kalia.
So, where do I start? So when I hear that, number one, I think fear and anxiety and in small doses is very useful, right? I think anxiety or fear of failure forces you to come correct. So like, let's think back to when you were in school.
So before you say, so are you saying that the fear and anxiety can be a good thing too?
Not in necessarily, small doses.
In small doses. Okay.
Yes. How you use it.
How you exactly. use it. Okay.
So like, let's think about when you're in school, right? And I work with high school students, so I hear a lot of their stories. And so they might say like, I have this one teacher, they grade really hard. Now, if you want to be an A student and you know that this teacher grades hard, yeah, you're going to be a little bit more stressed out about your work, but you're also going to try harder. You're going to meet that expectation because you have the goal in your head about what you want to accomplish. So in that instance, fear is used to motivate you to be better. Now, where fear and anxiety become a problem is when you get in that classroom and you say, wow, this teacher grades so hard. I might as well not even try. Right. You give up. That's where fear is crippling.
That's funny because so what she just said, I can very much relate to. So she says using fear and anxiety to gas you up to do things that you need to do. So like, for instance, one of my biggest fears is being in corporate America forever.
I knew you were about to say it.
That is probably that's in the top five right there, if not top three. So I use that drive, that fear that I'm going to be behind this. Just keeping it 100.
Absolutely.
If you think about it, every day I go to work, I don't know if y'all in the same type status, but when I go to work, I have a fear of being surrounded by all these cubicles, all these gray walls, all this daylight that I can't reach till 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. There's such a fear in my heart that I'm going to be here forever that it drives me to keep doing and taking the risk that I take.
Exactly.
Every day. And the more I'm there, the more it builds up. Like, you got to work hard. You got to go home and work even harder.
Right. You got to push. Like I said, fear is an evolutionary tool. It's how we've survived. So now we're at the standpoint where, like, we're not fearing being attacked by a bear. Like, we live in houses. But now we fear doing work that we don't want to do for the rest of our lives. Because the reality is we work for the majority of our lives. So now our evolution is, how do we take our passion and use that to provide for ourselves? I think that's our biggest challenge now. And that's like our evolutionary task, adjusting that so that we don't have to look at these gray walls. We can do the things we want to do and survive off of it. And how do we do that? We use our fear.
See, this is my area right here. See, this is where I like talking.
Go ahead and talk to us, Jay.
So it's funny because I talk to a lot of people. I talk to a lot of my coworkers, my friends. And what I'm starting to get grasp from everybody is that we live in a society where when we don't come from a lot and we get a little bit, we want to hold on to that little bit as long as we can. So if I grew up, and I say the slums in reference to saying you grew up less than where you are now. So if I grew up less than where I was when I was younger, and now I'm doing good for myself, most people don't want to take that risk to better themselves even further because they're like, I'm happy.
Comfortable.
There we go. That's the word I'm looking for. I'm comfortable. Mm-hmm. Why would I want to lose this comfortability to be even better?
Why would I put it at risk?
Exactly. When they don't understand that it's at risk every day because your life is in the hands of somebody else that can be like, well, your comfortability is gone now because you got to go. We don't need you no more.
And we see it happen at several companies. No company, regardless of how large or how small, whether it's Fortune 500, whatever, is immune to downsizing.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
I've seen it happen recently, very recently. And it's very cold the way they do it. It's just cutthroat. Hey, your services are no longer needed. You get walked out the door. So where is your comfort now?
It is. And it's funny because a lot of people think that there's certain areas that are more comfortable than others. Like I heard somebody the other day say, oh, your brother's in the work for the government. Well, I don't know if y'all remember, but the government got shut down earlier this year too. And he was out of a job, no check. So how's that any better than getting laid off any other place? So I look at the average person, and I understand because I'm the same way. If I get $10,000 in the bank, I want to see that in my bank account.
Right.
But in your bank account, it's not doing anything for you. We have other counterparts that take that $10,000 and they'll take a risk because they're like, if I got it this time, I definitely can get it again. And they'll take that risk to double it or triple it. And then now, if you would have took that risk before, you would have been so much, you could have the possibility of working hard to be farther than you are now. And then take that and make it more. Like, for instance, you said you started your LLC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any fears?
I had a lot of fears. I think the biggest fear was not knowing what exactly I wanted to do. Like, I know what I have to offer, but really not knowing how to monetize that. And so the biggest piece of advice I got was just starting with one right decision, right? Oprah talks about that. I'm a big Oprah fan. I listen to her podcasts and her interviews because she just talks with so many people. But she said for every success she had, it started with one right decision. Like doing one thing that you know is in the right step of where you want to be. And basically saying that over time, that cumulative impact of just doing one thing differently or one thing towards your goal makes all the difference. So I was very, very scared. And I've gotten to the point where I'm okay with not having it together, knowing that it's going to come because I know that I'm making steps every day. I'm reading, I'm listening, I'm learning from people and just looking at my environment around me. And I know it's going to come and I know I'm going to figure it out. But I don't think if I hadn't started my LLC, I would not be in this room today. Like I'm pretty sure I could guarantee that, because the first time we met, I was meeting with someone to talk about how she set up her business. So if I hadn't gotten the idea or decided this is what I'm going to do, I never would have reached out to her to get advice on what she did, meaning I never would have met y'all and we wouldn't be here. So that was just one right decision that's led to this moment.
I'm going to tell you what's interesting, E. Something happened to me yesterday. It's so funny. E, you know me for a long time. You know I'm the type that's going to jump out here. If I got a business idea, I'm going to try it. So in the past couple of years, I went from having the ideas of business to starting businesses to actually now, you know, putting my money up for it. So now I'm thinking to myself, oh, I'm good now. I'm doing the entrepreneur thing. I've taken the jump. And I thought that was the only jump, by taking your money and saying, okay, you know what, I'm going to put some money in the business. And just yesterday, I found out that that's not the only jump you take in entrepreneurship. So I had a business that I'm starting that's coming out soon. I have an app coming out. And I had an investor meeting with some investors. And they help you to set yourself up to, you know, get investors and angel investors and stuff like that. Well, a question came up. And I never, it just scared the mess out of him when he said it. And he was like, you know, we're glad you came. We hear everything. We like how it sounds. But when are you going to take this full time and leave your job? Do you know how that, I mean, to me, I was like.
That was kind of like when you're going up the slope of a roller coaster and you know that drop is about to come.
Yep.
And that heart kind of goes into you. Starts jumping out your chest.
I really didn't have nothing to say. Just like, well, you know, I gave the answer of, you know, yeah, you know, I've been planning on that, but honestly, I hadn't been planning on it. It's just like, wow. And he was like, you know, we're looking for people that's going to take this to the full extent, 100%.
Right. And we want to see your commitment level.
Exactly. So as an entrepreneur, people think that the steps are, oh, you know, you start a business, you do an LLC. That's step one.
Right.
That's the easy part.
Yeah. Right. Then they say, oh, well, you need to put money into it. Okay, that's step two. But what about another step after that? Oh, we need you to go ahead.
One of
the biggest steps. We want to take you all the way out to your comfort zone. Get rid of what you know and try something you don't.
Yeah, we about to take the training wheels off.
Oh, I left out of that meeting. I was sitting in the car like, shit. That's, whew.
And it goes back to what we were saying before. You, not just you, but people in general, mm-hmm. myself included, we get comfortable with a consistent paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know we can count on it, you know, twice a month, monthly, however often you get paid. But then when you remove that level of comfort, or when you even think about removing that level of comfort, you're like, man, one of the biggest things we think about is fear of the worst that could happen.
Exactly.
We don't think about what my indecision may be holding me back from this even greater than what I'm doing now.
I'm wondering what's going to happen if I leave this job.
Right. And I think that I learned a word last year that really changed my life because it gave me language to explain what I do constantly that I've been working to stop doing. But the word is ruminate. And that it means to think about something over and over and over again. So your question, it makes me think, how often do we ruminate over the negative?
All the time.
But then let's look at how often do we ruminate over the positive?
Or how often does that negative even happen?
Exactly. Which is anxiety.
Right. I only do it over the positive when the positive happens. I'm always thinking about the negative.
But you never know if the positive is capable of happening if you don't take the step.
Right. So if you're only thinking about the negative, right, that goes back to self-fulfilling prophecy. What if this bad thing happens? What if this bad thing happens? What if this bad thing happens? Now you're going to be way more conservative in the things that you really want to do. And since you're conservative, you're going to get that negative outcome, which means it's just going to reinforce your original belief of what if that negative thing. So now it's occurred. So now you're just you're de-incentivizing yourself from taking those risks because you keep ruminating or thinking about all of the negatives. So to go back to how you combat that, you have to start ruminating over the positives. What if this goes perfectly? What does that look like? What does it look like if I'm successful? And once you can list those things, go backwards, trace your steps backwards to figure out, okay, if this is the thing that I want to see in the world, what's the first step I can take to that? And you just do one step at a time. And I hear people say all the time, once you decide what you're going to do and you make that commitment to yourself, the universe will open up the path for you. People will come into your life to help you in ways you didn't even realize you needed. You'll get opportunities that you were never expecting. Things open up, but you have to change your mindset. It can't just be negative. Because if all you're thinking about is negative, you're not even going to be able to be in the same frequency to recognize those positive things that are happening around you.
Do you think that could be because certain things are resonated in our minds at early ages? There's a saying that a lot of people know, prepare for the worst, hope for the best.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things kind of get you to think, I'm always going to make sure I'm ready for the worst. See, so that right there, that saying right there gets you away from thinking about the positive.
In a sense, because true, we have to think about the negative things that could happen so that we can be better equipped. You want to jump out there, but you want to take calculated risks as well. You want to be well prepared. You don't want to show up to a gunfight with a knife.
Right.
That's true, but never once have I heard somebody say prepare for the best. Because if you prepare for the best, you can capitalize on the best as well.
Yeah, you have to prepare for both. Mm-hmm. Prepare for the best, prepare for the worst.
Both. Exactly. It's a both and. And I think, I think not preparing for the best almost guarantees that you will have the worst. If you're not working towards the best, if you're only planning for the worst, you gotta expect you're gonna have the worst. You didn't plan for anything else.
Right.
There's a book that probably a lot of people have read. Some may haven't. As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. Any of y'all heard of that?
I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
So just to be very concise, he talks about what we're talking about now. You get what you think.
Mm-hmm.
If you think positive, you get positive. If you think negative, you get negative.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to condition and train your mind to think about all the positive things. One of the worst things we can do is reflect on everything that we don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being thankful for everything that we do have, because when we appreciate what we do have, it opens the door for more abundance. But when we only focus on lack, then we continue to lack and we continue to chase waterfalls in a sense.
Exactly.
We continue to chase these very vain things that really don't even make us happy at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So we really have to start disciplining our mind. So one of the things that I recommend to everyone, meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation. Even if you only have a minute out of the day, 30 seconds, 5 minutes, whatever the case may be, try to eliminate all the background noise and just focus and center yourself, because that allows you to start really maintaining control of your mind, which is one of the most powerful machines ever created. When you look at the movie X-Men, one of the most powerful characters on there was Professor X. Even though he was a paraplegic, or maybe quadriplegic, I can't remember which one, but he was bound to a wheelchair, confined to a wheelchair, but he could control people's minds. And so without even lifting a finger, he would have the most power out of any of these other X-Men, any of these other warriors who had all these various talents, strengths, skills, abilities. He could control people's minds. So when you could control your mind, you have all the power to succeed inside yourself.
Exactly.
So focus on meditating. That's my piece of advice.
Meditating. And I think meditating looks different. Like, it doesn't mean just sitting there in silence, right? Mm-hmm. I know for me recently, Beyonce's Homecoming album. Like, I start off my day listening to that album because it makes me feel good. And while I'm listening to, like, the sound, because I love live bands, like, I'm saying to myself, today's going to be a great day. Like, I'm going to do something positive with today. I'm going to, like, capitalize on an opportunity or strengthen a relationship that I know is going to help me. Like, you have to speak positive things into existence, either in your mind or audibly or both, because throughout the course of the day, you're going to get messages that tell you the opposite, and they're going to be subconscious. So if you're not actively combating those or disrupting the negative things, you might think you're a positive person, but you're really not, because society is bombarding you. And you can't stop it unless you are taking actions for yourself. And something you brought up is the fact that, yes, I might want to, you know, leave my full-time job, but there's, like, it's a real fear about what will happen. And so you mentioned it, but this is something that I talk about, and it's, like, really the tagline of my business is this concept of informed empowerment. And like you said, taking calculated risk. So it's one thing to just up and quit your job because you have an idea. Like, that is impulsive, right? and it's well-intentioned, but part of being, you know, an entrepreneur is being a strong and sharp critical thinker. So you have to really understand all the things that could go wrong. Like, it is important to do that. But the issue is you cannot let knowing all the things that could go wrong stop you from proceeding with what you want to do or making you change your course. So, like, you have to be informed and know the risks, and you also have to be bold and being willing to take those risks anyway.
Absolutely. Jay, what about you? You got any closing thoughts on how to overcome fear?
I think sometimes, you know, you have to take the fear and just kind of try it. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, a lot of times we just don't, you know, I think Will Smith said a quote one time that the greatest things are hidden behind fear. Mm-hmm. So it, like anything, like kids walking, you know, they have to take those first steps and they're afraid, or just sometimes you just gotta try. You gotta try, because if you don't ever try, you're always gonna have that thought in the back of your head, what if?
What if?
What if?
And that's I think one of the most painful thoughts you could have, especially when you get ready to take those last breaths, is what if? Mm-hmm. And usually what if translates to somebody else doing your what if.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you don't, somebody else is chasing your dream right now. Somebody else is reading and studying and making those connections right now. So don't let fear inhibit you. Let the fear of losing motivate you to win. Mm-hmm. And so with that, we want to thank our lovely guest Kalia for dropping all those jewels on us today. So we definitely appreciate you. I knew from the first time we met, I'm like, yeah, she's going to have some fire for the podcast.
Well, and we will, if she allows us, to have her back on.
Absolutely.
I'm back anytime y'all need me.
Cool.
We got you. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, this is another episode of the Hidden Truth Podcast. Be sure to subscribe, like, share. All listening, all social media platforms, Hidden Truths Podcast. If you ever want to be a guest on the show, feel free to shoot us a DM on IG or send us an email, thehiddentruthspodcast@gmail.com. As always, kings and queens, stay up, we out.